Welcome to They'll Be Fine.
We're your hosts, Kim Heckman,
Trinette Attree, and Lisa Pagano.
You've probably heard it before. They're smart. They're gifted. They'll be fine. But what if that's not always true?
In this podcast, we'll explore the surprising struggles that many gifted students face that lead to underachievement, as well as discuss practical strategies to help these brilliant minds reach their full potential.
Because they deserve better than just being fine. Let's give them what they really need to thrive and succeed.
In this episode, Leslie Kerner and Chris Ryan discuss the educational mission and inspiration behind Silver Quicken. The goal of Silver Quicken is to provide engaging and challenging content for gifted students through puzzles, games, and a fantasy narrative specifically designed to encourage productive struggle, creativity, and teamwork. They introduce their SEED curriculum, a set of structured puzzle-based learning activities that help students build problem-solving skills and foster a deep love for learning. The episode also delves into how teachers can implement these activities and the additional support available for educators. We talk about the Seedling Squad, an online professional learning community, and future directions for Silver Quicken. You might even catch a Taylor Swift reference or two or 13. Enjoy. We're here with Leslie Kerner and Chris Ryan from Silver Quicken, and we are excited. They are returning guests to the podcast. And every time they come on, we learn something new. So maybe we can get started with you guys telling us a little bit about Silver Quicken. What is the mission? What inspired you to build Silver Quicken? And how do you guys know each other?
We went to grad school together, actually, in North Carolina at Duke. And we've been friends ever since. And we worked together while we were at Duke. We were both curriculum representatives of our respective classes. So we've always, and we both had education backgrounds. So we were kind of unique in the business school world. So we found each other that way, and we've sort of stayed friends ever since.
Yeah, we were two of the tigers in Antarctica, as you might say. Everyone's back at business school for school, of course, but some people are like, I'm just here for the finance and da da da. And but the actual business and activity of education is super fascinating and interesting to both of us as a career. Silver Quicken has the mission of providing kids with really great challenges, of inspiring kids and enabling kids to meet those challenges. And we want to do that with fun stuff, because fun stuff provides intrinsic motivation. And our kids are often told what to do, punished if they don't do it, all these things, do this, do that. And we wanted to create things that would draw kids in. So that's why we use some of the funnest sort of things on the planet. Puzzles, games, all inside a fantasy story. And that pulls kids into the great challenges that are hard and legitimately hard. And especially our gifted kids often don't hit enough hard stuff that's hard for them, right? So they don't know what to do when they hit something they're struggling with. I'll come back to my own personal encounters with this in a few minutes. But we want to then help kids learn how to deal with that struggle, to productively struggle, right? And they're through that developing problem-solving skills on authentically hard stuff, developing the creativity skills to think outside the box and divergently. And they're developing the teamwork skills, which, again, we don't work on enough in school. And we really need our gifted kids to be really good at that, because they're often punished by group work, to be frank, in sort of regular classes. So as Leslie said, we have been in touch, she and I, over the years. And then 2020 comes around.
Yeah, we really connected again during the pandemic, when we were both sort of realizing that, and my kids were third and sixth grade at the time, so they were sort of right in the throes of learning how to collaborate, learning some really basic skills. And what I was realizing was, yes, of course, we were missing reading, math, a lot of the core academic skills. But what they were really missing was how to problem solve and how to look at a new situation and know how to start it. They were becoming more and more helpless. And so I think that as that continued, and Chris and I had reconnected on all that we wanted kids to be doing in terms of being excited about learning and the wonder of learning. And we thought, like, this is the perfect combination. We need to really engage kids in how do you do this hard problem-solving stuff, but can we do it in a way that really brings them in and is a lot of fun? So
I would say I'm a grown-up gifted kid, and Leslie is too, even though
I wasn't.
She wasn't formally labeled as such, except by your second grade teacher, right?
She was the only one who ever brought it up, but I don't think it was a thing that happened in Michigan at that time. I don't know. I've never identified.
You should have been identified. I strongly believe that. But I struggled with struggle, and in particular, anything that was academically scary to me at all. That was like an area of my Inside Out movie, you know, the islands that the girl has, Riley. And for me, gifted was one of my islands. Like, I'm identified as gifted. Don't attack that island. So I had struggles in the rest of my life, but inside the classroom, I was rocking, I was rolling, I skipped a grade, I was ahead on things. I identify as that. And so anything that could possibly threaten that, anything that was going to be a struggle inside the classroom, I avoided. I grabbed stuff. I had great teachers along the way, but it wasn't until my junior year at Harvard when I hit a really hard set of classes in physics. And what did I do? I stopped going to class. I stopped. I did not ask for help. I did not want to. I was like, I can figure this out on the exam. And I didn't. And so I almost failed out. And that to me is part of the mission that I feel we have at Silver Quicken is I want kids to encounter this kind of productive struggle or the struggles and then learn how to struggle with it productively at 10 or 11 or 9, not at 20, 21 like I was. And then it's like, I'm grateful for that experience because it got me down the road of education. I started teaching right after undergrad because I wanted to bring to other kids, hey, I don't want to do to them what I felt like in some cases was done to me. I want to challenge them appropriately and have them feel supported. And so that lifelong mission, in a sense, is here in Silver Quicken too.
That makes so much sense of why you have that mission with that personal experience. I know there's a lot of listeners who have children who have very similar experiences. We just listened to a guest who, I loved how she said it, you know, gifted kids don't have a lot of experience with getting things wrong. So by the time they're 10, they might have only had a handful of opportunities, while the typical child has figured that out of how to handle failure earlier. And so it's really easy to fall into that fixed mindset that this gifted island in my brain is my profile. And then when you do have more rigorous coursework, if that's high school or college or even in a workplace setting, you feel personally attacked. Full disclosure, I use Seed in my classroom. And we're going to speak with you about that and how you created it and all of that. But I can tell you, it's one of these rare opportunities where it's not academically driven. So it provides that opportunity for the students to have lots of chances of failure, but they don't consider it failure because it's not an academic failure.
That's right.
It's just
didn't
complete the puzzle yet, but they know they can. They're just going to keep trying, keep trying, keep trying.
Right. And it's so much easier to do something like that when you said, like, it's not part of what they're expected to do in a normal academic setting. It's different. It's unique. It's weird sometimes, like, how would I, you know, it's sort of, they can put down their baggage of like, I'm supposed to know how to do this because nobody knows how to do it. It's totally weird. It's not like something they've already learned or something their prior knowledge is supposed to help them with. And so that is freeing for kids, I think, especially kids who feel that need to always be perfect. I was not a gifted identified kid, but I am an eldest daughter, which I know, Lisa, you know what that means. But so I do have that same thing. And that is something that perfectionism is really hard to set down. But when you're doing something either in part of a story, like the Seed episodes have, you're doing this because Jojo and Connor need you. It's much easier to stay engaged.
We had a girl in one of our first after schools say to us, you know, in Silver Quicken, it's totally okay to have no idea what you're doing. And she said this with a big grin. And her teacher told me, you know, she's pretty anxious and she's pretty gifted. And she, in this, is learning how to set down that baggage. And stumble around and not know what to do on a problem at first, and then start observing, picking up, what does she see? What does she notice? Okay, can I put that together and get to a solution she didn't at first think she could? And then it feels like real accomplishment.
Well, why don't you go ahead and just tell our listeners what is SEED? You launched it with Dr. Brienhausen last year.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm telling you, all the little pieces, the way you've organized it. So just, I guess, give them like an overview of what SEED is.
So we met Brian a year and a half ago, probably. We saw him speak. I was at the Arkansas Gifted Conference, Agate, and he was speaking and I was texting Chris. This guy is exactly on our same page. Like, he's even talking cocoon and butterfly, which is something
you were taking pictures. Oh my gosh.
Of course, we knew his name, but we had not met him in person. So I went to him at one of the breaks, and you know, you guys know him well. So he's shy. And I was like, hey, we've got to meet. And he was like, okay, you're a lot, but okay. And so then I sent Chris to him. He was at NCAGT, and I had you go talk to him. And finally,
he finally, I've heard we're supposed to meet. Like, again, a little bit like, okay.
This was after one of his presentations. So, but then we ended up meeting, and we just had the mind meld. It was so great that we all realized that what we really cared about was, we all loved puzzles, and we all had been, you know, puzzle head kids kind of growing up, but that there was more to it. And I think one thing that we all really cared about was the thinking and feeling skills. And we wanted to do something. We wanted to do some kind of collaboration where we could help gifted kids build their thinking and feeling skills, because so much of what, you know, people expect, okay, they just need to be, they need acceleration, they need more rigor, but as we all know, there's a lot more than that. These things are scary. Trying something new is scary. Like you said, Kim, it's, to not get it right is scary. And so there are feelings that we need to help kids come to grips with and really learn how to move through. And so we started thinking about, well, how could we combine puzzles with these thinking and feeling skills? And I think the story was compelling to Brian as well. The Silver Quicken universe is a fantasy fiction story that Chris is really the primary author of. It's his concept. And we've been so happy to help him build it and continue to help you build it. But, you know, what we ended up with was this book that is 17 episodes or chapters, as we call them. Each one is part of the first one is an intro. The next 16 are each part of a narrative cycle. So there are four narrative cycles. A story sort of threads through them. And then each episode in that four episode cycle, one is convergent, one is divergent, one is cooperative, and one is reflective. So we're really hitting all of those ways of thinking. And then we're having kids reflect each time they go through one of the activities. So for the convergent episodes, it's a lot of different kinds of puzzles. For the divergent episodes, those are a lot of creativity exercises, drawing prompts, writing prompts, you know, things that they're building something. The cooperative ones are either cooperative competitive games or, again, building something together, engineering game type things. And then reflections are intentional guided reflections.
Each chapter also has some thematic extension activities. Episode one is called Four Maze, and the kids in the story wind up confronting this maze, and there are four kids, and they each have their own maze to figure out. Well, the extension activities on that are more mazes. So either solving more mazes that have messages embedded inside. And again, these are tough mazes, not to get to the end of, but to figure out, what does it mean? Where's the message embedded in this? How could there be a message inside this maze, which I don't see at first glance? And that's the thing that we see in particular with gifted kids solving our mazes that have hidden messages. They'll get to the end, say, I'm done. They got there faster than anyone else. And then we say, where's the message? Oh, wait, there's a message? Yes, there's a message. Oh, man. Okay, well, and then they go back and we work on, what do you see in there? What could be part of a message? What are messages made of? Words and letters. Okay, is there anything that looks like a letter in there? Oh, maybe that thing is. Let's pretend that is a letter of the message. Let's test that out. Are there other letters like that, et cetera? So it's process building as well. So we aren't just providing, like, here are a bunch of activities, but very important that we have research underpinning the whole thing. Dr. Brian Housen brought a ton of that. So we've got the Williams model of creativity. We've got the Torrance Manifesto for Children. We've got a lot of great support for SEED. But then there's, and I don't know what else I was going to say. I lost my thread. The dribble hit my, the basketball hit my foot and rolled away.
Well, I can jump in. So I love that you have this based on research, but I've used it. And the three parts that I love as a, so I'm a gifted ed teacher. I align everything to my student standards that they're learning in the classroom. Mm-hmm. But of course, I'm also doing logic and divergent thinking. I love the collaboration piece because, like you said, Chris, they're having to solve those four puzzles. And we have some fast finishers who aren't used to getting to a whole nother level of pulling things together, which if you're thinking right brain, left brain, you know, I intentionally put my groups together knowing their strengths and areas that they need more work on.
Right.
What I've noticed is that collaboration piece, I've been able to say, you need to listen to all voices at your table because all voices need to be heard to solve the bigger message. It's not right. Just these small little logic puzzles that need to be done. But then the reflection piece is wonderful because there is this graphic organizer where the kids have a visual aid to go through their
right.
thinking about their own thinking type. You know, we do a yes. lot of that already in gifted ed, but the fact that they know it's coming, oh, here's the reflection piece now, you know, like it's routine. And then the third element I was not expecting. So in the book, it specifically says some ideas of how to start the Silver Quicken story with music or maybe a hat or something. And what I've noticed is there's so much magic happening in my classroom because of that little great. Element. I don't do it every day. This is kind of like a treat for them. So they have other things they need to be doing throughout the week. And if we accomplish that, we get to jump back into the story. And I have students ask me, like, do we get to do Silver Quicken today? So I know
it's great.
The treat. It is great, isn't it? But that element of magic of the fantasy world that we are diving in together. It feels like a team. It's wonderful. I love it.
Oh, that's so great. Well, that's such
a That's really feedback. Nice to hear. Yeah, that's really great to hear.
One of the mottos that we had in Latin on a slide early on was magic is for everyone. I love various fantasy stories, but in almost every fantasy story I've read since I was a kid, some people have magic and others don't. Some people are muggles, right? And no one wants to be just the muggle or whatever. And part of where we were going with this world was we wanted a big group of kids that could look like everybody. And at different points, different ones are at the forefront. And they all have the power to dream. They all have the power of imagination. And that's the world in which they meet. They think they're going to, again, this was born during the pandemic. So it was an online after school. The 10 kids of Silver Quicken think they're joining an online after school. And they fall asleep at that same moment that they're logging in on their tablets or what have you. And they're in a shared dream. It's not quite Inception, if you remember that movie, but there's something like it. It's a shared, stable dream that's been around for hundreds of years. And of course, the bad guys want to figure out, how are you doing that? And it being a dream world within really a dream universe that anything can happen in, that gives us a kind of milieu, a world in which you can have lots and lots of different kinds of stories exist. That's our hope over time, is that we just keep building this out with more and more stories.
But I think you're right, Kim, that even now without that and with just the stories that are part of SEED, for example, kids get into it. It really is the hook. And it really is the thing that drives them to want to do some of these things, right? So when they know that it's Silver Quicken time, like you're saying, then it feels apart from school. And it feels like something that's special. And back to something we said that you said earlier, too, it gives them that psychological safety to try something new and set down their baggage and sort of just be in the moment in that story. And that's really what we had hoped as we were building the book. If you're seeing that, it's just great. We had another teacher in Arizona who does I think she does it every Friday. And she has music playing and lights. And she said, as kids are coming in, they're like, it's Seed Friday. And they're so excited. And they feel like that's a portal to another world, which is really fun to hear.
And we got
to
credit Brian for a lot of the, like, there's a couple of pages of ideas. One human soul could not possibly incorporate all the ideas of stagecraft on those pages. But I think we had initially written a small thing. And Brian's like, let me do something with this. I think we need a lot. We need give people a lot of options for how to create. And it doesn't take much. It just takes a little bit. And story, there's a lot of research on just how powerful story can be. And it's not built in enough to what we do. And we think that it was very important to us to have a proprietary story that we could build things off of, as opposed to license, even if we could, Percy Jackson or what have you, because we wanted to be able to build stories on the fly, create new ones, and ultimately have kids creating some of the stories in this world. Because one thing that we say, actually, in the realm of the Silver Quicken universe, kids are the strongest dreamers. So there are mentors who are in charge of the school, the castle, and all that sort of thing. They're not as strong as the kids. They're there to guide and so forth, but the kids are the best dreamers. And so they have the most power to create things or to mess them up, whatever. And so that was something that we really wanted to have be at the forefront. It ultimately in the story, so the kids become dream protectors. We have some free puzzles on our site now, daily puzzle, and the little stories, the kids are out in the dream, riding over the dream ocean, rescuing a kid from a nightmare that they've caused themselves, a big storm or what have you. We're so excited to hear, Ken, your students are engaging with it. And we'd love to talk with them. I'm not so far from your school, so I'd love to stop in and say hello on a seed day.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, they don't even know when a seed day is, so I'm using it as a mystery. And what I do is I put on E.T.'s theme song. That's its nostalgic for me, and they hear the music, which I always had Disney music or something playing in the background, but they now, it's like Pavlov's dog. They hear the sound and they know that everyone has to clean everything up that they're working on, and then we will start the story. And I'm telling you, I keep telling my husband, someone has to come film this, because they are so excited, they clean up so quickly. And then I say something like, let's unlock the portal, and they scream, let the magic begin. You know, it's so exciting. Well, it's interesting that you said, so stories do pull the kids in. And a good example would be like Dungeons and Dragons, on that we have adults that are still playing that because it is the story and the element. And I can remember those books where you get to choose your own adventure.
Yep.
Right. So all of a sudden it became like, oh, I'm part of the story. I'm part of this thing that I'm getting to read. But, you know, the National Treasure movies, if I could solve those puzzles and read the story, like that just seems like the perfect combo. And that's kind of what you're doing here.
That's exactly it. I mean, they're inspirational to us and others out there. I mean, yes, I'd love for there to be a Silver Quicken movie on the model of National Treasure one day.
That is amazing. I know. And like hearing Kim's experience with the seed book is so fun. And some of our teachers are using it as well. We just had Brian do a session with them a couple weeks ago. And so we're starting to hear some feedback from our teachers about how cool it is to see kids in a different light. Like they see other kids rising to the occasion who may not do that.
Yes.
Which I think is so cool, because the book is also helping with talent scouting and finding some untapped gifts and untapped potential in kids. So I think that's amazing. And it really is nurturing that academic potential in all. How are other educators responding to SEED? How are the students responding to SEED? And is it what you imagined, or is it beyond?
I would say it's beyond. I'm thrilled every time I get to talk to teachers about using it in their classroom. And people will come up to us if we have a booth or we're presenting at a conference and say similar things. And they'll say just how much fun it's been for them to sort of reignite learning with some of their students, and to find students who might have been more quiet, who might not have been, or who weren't even identified because of language barriers, or because it just didn't, some of the general identification tools just didn't work for them. And so they were like, we're starting to see that some kids, nonverbal reasoning is a big, what I hear a lot too, is some kids who are really strong in nonverbal reasoning, but maybe didn't score high on their identification metrics because of whatever reason, they're starting to see like, wait a minute, they're doing so well in this and they're asking for more and they're showing such interest that we want to pursue that. So that's been really fun. And then kids, I think one of the most fun things that Chris and I have gotten to do in the past couple of months is we've had a few times where we've done Zooms with classes of fourth, fifth, sixth graders. We had one in Las Vegas with, she's Glitter and Gifted, if you guys know her on social, Amanda O'Neill. She's fantastic, and her kids had tons of questions. So she brought Brian, Chris, and I into the class on Zoom. They sent us questions in advance, and then they asked questions in real time. And it was so fun to hear kind of how they had been affected by SEED and how what they had learned, but also what they were curious about. So getting to hear directly from the kids has been the best, and I think far surpassed what we even anticipated.
100% agree.
I love that. I think that's so exciting. How can teachers get started using SEED? And I know it's a whole story. Do you recommend that they go in order or can they pick and choose?
It's a great question. I would say they can pick and choose. The place to start, though, as an introduction for both themselves and their students would be episode zero, this one we call Welcome to Silver Quicken. It's the place to start and introduces the world. And the puzzle is not too crazy hard. It's a welcome letter to Silver Quicken with some messages embedded inside. I won't say exactly how, but it's not crazy to find those messages. And that kind of sets up the world. I would say to look at those stagecraft ideas in a couple of early pages in the intro. And also, we have of materials that are available electronically. So one thing that's really important is that by going on our website, in fact, the link is on the back of our book, it's /seed resources with a hyphen in there. That takes you to, and all you got to do is enter your email, and it takes you to a page that is well-organized, gives you, for episode zero, that Welcome to Silver Quicken episode. You get the slides with images that you can project while you're reading the story aloud. You get any printable that's the artifact, as we call it, the handout that the kids are going to work with, the welcome letter or the form A's that we talked about earlier, any artifact the kids need to work with. And that includes also the reflection, the guided reflection activities. So those are all printable.
And the extensions too.
And the extensions as well. So anything that you would want to hand out to a kid in printable, you don't have to take the book and try to get it onto the photocopier. I remember I'm old enough to know the mimeograph machine, my first one with the blue ink. In my first teaching job, I was like, oh my gosh. Well, you don't have to do that. We have them printable. And so starting with episode zero and just setting aside half an hour, maybe even just 20 minutes to dive in, show the slides, read the story, add a little stagecraft, maybe play your favorite little song. I have a little Silver Quicken SEED music that I've also chosen, that an old song by Enya called Epona, some Lord of the Rings music in there. I got my playlist. And even just dimming the lights, finding a dimmer from the fluorescent white, just magic in the school with those lights on. So if there's just something else you can do with the lighting, that's good. And go ahead and do episode zero and then see what happens. Then if you want to do just the convergent activities, they're arranged in such a way you can just go down the episodes 1, 5, and add 4, 9, and add another 4, 13. The episodes are all convergent activities, and you can find other ones. So if you really want to customize, the stories are sequential, but it doesn't really matter. They're all standalone episodes. It's like watching a new show. You can just jump right in and here you are.
And you brought up a good point that we haven't talked about. This is another thing that I think teachers will appreciate. You've chunked these into 20 to 30 minute blocks.
Yeah.
Typically, a classroom in elementary school setting is going to be about that. You know, we don't have an hour to stop and do some nonverbal puzzles. Mm-hmm. I also think the fact that the curriculum is long, so it's continuous of all these nonverbal puzzles. So if you have students in your classroom who are great at those and not the academics, you're allowing them to see that they are gifted yes. in this area, which they parents, yeah. typical parents do not bring this into the household, right? They're trying to do math and reading. But That's then right. we have gifted students who've been identified because of their academics, and they're not exposed to this type of thinking, which we all know that this is the thinking that gets you to real success of this problem-solving mind frame. Yeah. Is there a certain age that you would recommend for the curriculum?
I mean, we say that it's third through eighth grade, that it really requires a reading level at around a third grade level. But we know of a lot of gifted second graders that are using it as well, teachers who have gifted second graders that are using it. We do have a Little Solvers program. It's not part of SEED, but we have started to build some activities for those littlest gifted learners. And we're excited to continue to build those. But SEED itself is really third through eighth grade. And we think kind of third through sixth being the real sweet spot. A question that we get a lot is, well, are there different activities for the third graders versus the sixth to eighth graders? And the answer is no, kind of on purpose. But we think that all of these activities are both challenging enough for the eighth grade set, but interesting and interesting for all the kids too. We know that by the time you're in eighth grade, a fantasy fiction story may not be your jam anymore. So you might, you know, that's what, but the challenges are hard enough without the story for even, I mean, I have a senior in high school and Kim, you do too. I don't know if you ever have them do the puzzles, but I do have my son calibrate sometimes and he'll be like, you think a third grader is going to do this? This just took me 15 minutes and I'm not even sure. And I was like, yeah, I do think that with enough hinting and enough empowerment and enough belief in that student, then yeah, I do think they can. And we see that happen. And that's the most fun. I think to another point you said is that we really think that these challenge kids in all different ways. So sometimes kids are really good at logic puzzles. And that's the thing that many gifted kids, right? Like, it's just like they do logic puzzle books. They love doing them. They do nonograms. They do visual logic, math logic, all of it. But creativity exercises might be super tough, you know, starting with a blank page, trying to come up with a story that might really be challenging. And so one thing that we try to thread throughout the book is the sort of value in all different kinds of thinking. And I think you had mentioned, like, we need all different kinds of thinking at the table within the story. And back to something Chris said about the milieu being very friendly, it's sort of fertile ground for lots of different ideas. One of them is about the strands of a solver, we say. And so we say that every solver has three strands. And it's introduced in, I think, episodes 1 through 3, right? We introduce. So in the first episode, one of the mentors talks about the find path. And that's the part of your brain that's really driven to solve. And it's sort of the convergent thinking side. It's the, you know, let me get to the answer side of our brain. And I think episode 2 talks about the Weaver-Chanter part of our brain, which is the divergent thinking side, the creative side, the innovative side, the let's ask questions and learn more. And then the third one is the commons keeper. And that's the part of our brain that brings people together and that listens for those quiet voices and builds teams. And through sort of normalizing all three of those, we really help kids build that metacognition about themselves, but also the appreciation of other thinkers in their class. And I think that's something that, you know, we haven't spent enough time with our gifted kids sometimes on appreciating other gifts that are different from your own. Mm-hmm. And so I think we feel really excited to bring that value and to help teachers bring that value, because I know teachers are working hard to instill that in their kids, but sometimes it takes a lot of work because it's not something that has always been part of the conversation. So we hope that language will help kids really start to appreciate that those thinking skills about themselves and others.
And you've also done a good job of building in support for teachers. So if this sounds interesting to teachers that are out there, but they don't have a lot of experience with this type of, you know, puzzle problem solving, You've written in how to give them that scaffolding when they're struggling. Mm-hmm. You wrote in these hints, right, within the curriculum. So sometimes, you know, a teacher might just jump to giving them the answer because they can't see the different steps that they actually could be getting to. So I love that piece. It is a turnkey type of of curriculum. Like you said, Chris, you had all the PDFs online, which are very appreciated, let me tell you. And you are like, have short on time. I could just go straight to the website, download it, print out my 50 copies, and then I can glance at what I need to do. I've got my materials. And then in the lesson, while I'm giving them that thinking time, I can just crack open and see, well, here are some questions I could be guiding them if they're struggling.
Yeah, we really want to. Someone just asked me at the IAGC conference, well, what do I do if I don't know how to solve these? And I was like, we actually don't expect you to have to solve these. Granted, if you want to, that's amazing. And a lot of our teachers do want to do that first, but you don't have to. And even if you don't have your book with you, even if you don't have those hints in front of you, you can always do, we call it See, Wonder, Pretend test. And it's one of the first things that the students learn, that kids learn in the book. In the guided reflection on episode one, we call it See, Wonder, Pretend test. P.S. It's kind of the scientific method in kid-friendly disguised language. But, you know, and Chris mentioned it earlier, he gave an example. What do you see? And sometimes I've been in a situation where I'm teaching a seed lesson and I don't remember the answer. And so I can't actually give them that many hints because I don't remember the answer. And they'll be like, well, you know it, don't you? And I'm like, no, let's figure it out
together.
We're
going to work this out together.
What do we see? What do you notice on the page? And at first, you know, and sometimes you'll get this like folded arms, nothing. This is stupid. You know, because it's scary and they don't know how to attack it. It's like, okay, well, what do you see? Like literally, what do you physically see on the page? Oh, I see numbers. Okay. What kind of numbers? Are they all the numbers? Do you see 1 million? No. 1 to 25, 1 to 26. Oh, well, what does that make you wonder? I don't know. There are 26 letters. Oh, pretend that's true. Try it out. What would that tell you? And then they start to be like, okay. And so that'll spark interest. And I didn't really give a hint at all. I just helped them notice what they saw on the page. So that's something that we love to help teachers realize that, like, you don't have to know it, actually. And we want to give you the answers and they're all there. But even if worse comes to worse and you're trying to do this and you forgot your book or you don't have access to it, the kids will figure it out.
And it doesn't rely on a lot of prior knowledge. Like in that case, it relied on the alphabet. Right? Which is why we have different things for K through two. But by third grade, everybody knows the alphabet pretty much. And I think that's one of the challenges often for gifted kids when they first encounter our materials, that frustration of, oh, all this prior knowledge that I have isn't necessarily going to help me like solve this puzzle. Or they jump to a conclusion and propose it. And then, oops, that's actually not right. What do I do now? I ran into a brick wall. And so forth. I got to say that Leslie applies, she really puts herself into the mind of a student when I send her new puzzles that I'm writing. I sent one the other day that had, it's really cool looking. If you look up the Apollonian window, it's circles inside circles, an infinite array of them. It's amazing how it works that like you're fitting two circles across the middle, then a third one, then the smaller size. And it turns out that it's all integers, which is kind of remarkable. And there's a pattern. And no one's figured out certain things about the pattern, but there's a pattern to it. And what did you tell me? You said, oh, you know, when you first looked at it, it was like, how the heck am I ever going to figure anything out about that? And then you looked at the pattern below and you said, okay, well, there's got to be something I can solve in the air. And you started, and then you cracked it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that we want kids to have in the process of solving our puzzles is sometimes to look and say, I don't have any idea what to do with that. Okay, well, let me just fall back on basics. So in terms of supporting teachers, we're all about that. And you can always reach out to us. And actually, by the time this airs, we'll have already had our seedling squad first meeting.
The kickoff, yeah.
Yeah, the kickoff will have already happened.
It's interesting. You're talking about things that... The one negative that listeners might have is, I can't teach this. It doesn't align to my standards of what I need. But then, Leslie, you just touched on the fact that you're teaching them this process where I can then say, listen, this kid is going to take an EOG.
Yeah.
And if they get a problem and they're able to stop and say, I have no idea, well, they just froze and they're not going to be able to answer it. But if they can stop and say, well, what do I see? Right? What do I wonder? Why did they give me these numbers or these facts in the problem?
Yes.
So it is teaching thinking skills that will connect to grade level scores.
100%.
So there is a purpose to teaching these besides just creative thinking or being able to solve.
That's right.
It does tie to academic success.
You know, Kim, I spent a number of years in test preparation for the GMAT, which is the Graduate School Admissions Test for Business Schools.
Oh, I don't like you. I took that.
and GRE and LSAT. And one of the things that, and it's a funny corner of education where, you know, helping in this case, like 20-somethings for the most part, confront the GMAT, which is an adaptive test, and it's math and it's verbal. And the adaptive test means that you're going to get, after a little while, it figures out your level, and it's giving you problems that you only have about 50% chance of getting right, which is so hard for the kids going back to business school, especially if they've achieved everything they wanted in there at Goldman Sachs or whatever other investment bank, a consulting firm. And so my old firm, serving them, wound up doing really good business because we learned how to, I mean, first of all, we invested in great teachers. And then it was, hey, we're going to teach these students how to solve problems this way that they don't know how to do. Okay, what do you see? What do you wonder? Those questions come from a mathematician of about 100 years ago. He wrote a book called How to Solve It, this guy, George Polya. He said, you got to teach mathematicians to ask themselves simple questions over and over again. Some of this see, wonder, pretend test is inspired by George Polya's method of training mathematicians and mathematics teachers to be great. It's got this root, and it's actually going to, I have a strong thesis, we haven't proven the case yet, but I have a strong thesis that someone going through Silver Quicken will be better at EOGs and at these kinds of tests like the SAT and ACT and the GMAT one day, because they'll be used to the uncertainty of a random math problem popping up, which is very unlike what normal quizzes and tests in math are like.
I think so too. And like those thinking skills are going to transcend all the discipline areas. So right. It should bolster success across all academic areas. I think we should do a research study.
I love that, Lisa.
I agree. Let's do it.
Like a fun project.
Yes.
So 100%. You guys have been absolutely killing it on social media lately. And I recently saw a post that was paying homage to the Taylor Swift and a play on her life of a showgirl with the whole life of a solver. And of course, I loved that so much. Problem solving is important, right? I always say there's no shortage of problems in the world. Like we need more problem solvers and not more problem makers. We already have a lot of those.
That's it.
Teachers encourage students to really embrace that solver's mindset.
Thank you for noticing our Taylor content.
I'm a fangirl. I'm like, all my favorite things. Like,
I mean, I tagged her and Travis. I even asked them to collaborate. So I'm hoping, you know, someday, honestly, with her love of numerology, she just needs to get a box of, you know, a book.
We sent her Trisc
coming.
Puzzle that's on writing with the number 13, Trisca Decagraphia. Right. You know, we still need to get it to her.
Yeah,
she's
exactly.
She's gonna notice you guys one day. I know she is, and I'm gonna make it happen. Like we're just gonna keep putting it out.
We gotta keep doing it. But yeah, I think it's so important that teachers really help students embrace being solvers because of exactly what you just said, Lisa. There are so many problems in our world, and these kids. I mean, this generation of students who are in elementary, middle school, high school right now, they are the ones who are gonna be solving a lot of these problems, and a lot of them are novel problems. They're not things that we have encountered before. It's going to take not just great actual solving, but working together, bringing in those diverse perspectives, being able to listen to one another and approaching new things in new ways. And so I think that we feel really, really strongly that is where this generation of kids needs to go. They need all the academics, of course. They need to learn all the basics, but I think that's really where they need to go. And so you know, the solver's mindset or the life of a solver, really, I mean, that post in particular was just kind of 13, of course, things that we thought really describe the characteristics of a solver. And there are so many more, but things like resilience, persistence, resourcefulness, collaboration, these kinds of skills are what our kids need and what we as teachers can help build in the classroom. And certainly our seed book or our other programs are not the only ways to do that, but just bringing that to the consciousness, we hope, helps teachers kind of think about it and keep it top of mind as they're working with their kids, and especially their gifted kiddos who may need some extra boost in some of those things like collaboration. And sometimes that's not always fun or easy. when you're in a gifted classroom. So, but it's super, super important.
Oh, yeah. And I think what you guys have done here, like, this is so well done and so well put together. It's thoughtful. You know, our teachers are so busy. You've made everything for them. And I think that is something that they'll really appreciate, the ease of use, and they don't have to do a lot to it. Like, it's already awesome. It's just take a chance and implement it and try it.
Yeah.
You guys mentioned the Seedling Squad briefly. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What will the Seedling Squad do? What are you hoping to accomplish with the squad?
The Seedling Squad is the name for our new online professional learning community that's based around Seed. And we are super excited. By the time this airs, we'll have had our first meeting, having a number of educators who are already using Seed sharing a little bit about how they're using it already. It's not going to be very top down from Leslie or Brian or me, but rather we want to hear from people who are using it now and surface questions. And we've already got a bunch of people signed up. If we hit the cap, we'll either figure out a way to raise the cap, or if we still have a cap, we will, for that first meeting. It's a community. It's not just that one meeting. We'll have more people who are showing up already. We haven't even really turned the lights on in the auditorium, and people are already in there putting comments up and saying, here's who I am and here's how I'm using it, or what have you. And that's great to see. And so we want to leverage the power of community. And one of the things that I love about the Gifted Ed community, as I mean, you, Lisa, and Kim, and others have built it over time. I think back when I was a kid, gifted education specialists were operating in silos. I mean, there wasn't a way for them to really know. And if you were the one in your school, you were a tiger in Antarctica. You would have just floated down and no one knew what you did. And maybe I remember going to the challenge program, which was in Delaware where I grew up, a pullout program once a week. And it was a lifesaver. It was great. But I think those teachers were like, they were grabbing what they could. Now, this is back in, I don't want to say what antediluvian period this was in, but it was before the flood. So now, but like, I think that this is another step in a process that I think NCAGT as a whole, as I think the national and other state conferences have done and organizations, and have really leveraged the power of, hey, our practitioners on the ground need to see and talk and hear, and they need to be with each other, and that we want to be a part of that through the Seedling Squad.
And we do hope that our aim is to do another convening, so online, obviously, but this one that will have happened in November, and now this intervening time, folks are collaborating online with each other, but we're hoping that in January, after the holidays and when people are back in school, we can do another one. People can still join and read about and engage with others on the best practices and the lessons learned about Seed and how to get started, because some of the things we've talked about here today. And then we'll do another convening where we can hear from each other live with Chris and Brian and me as well.
I love that. You guys are starting a whole Seed movement here. And you're right. Gifted teachers need to connect and collaborate with other gifted teachers. Any teacher needs that collaboration, right? Like, the job's not easy. And I think if they can bounce ideas off of each other, it makes them feel not so alone. And it gives them some inspiration and motivation to keep going and do better for our kids. So what is next for Silver Quicken? I know you guys keep yourselves very busy with all of the different daily puzzles. I see that you're out and about at conferences. What's next for you guys?
You mentioned the daily puzzles, and I brought them up before too. That's taking up some time to build those. Those are free on our website. We started in early September, and we're going to run for 40 weeks all the way through to next June or so. Your puzzle has a story. They're Cypher Monday and Logic Wednesday, and I don't know why I skipped number Tuesday. You know, it's counting 1, 3, 2, 7, 5.
It's a puzzle. He's making a puzzle right now.
I'm making a puzzle right now. Oh, gosh.
I'm solving it right now.
Right. So, but they all have a little tiny story in it and a sequence across a week. And it's a super lightweight to just get exposed to Silver Quicken. So if we think made Seed to be turnkey and so forth, and to really support teachers, but as a way of even just taking a toe in the pool, so to speak, we wanted to put out the daily puzzle, and the next day we put up the answer on social, and we also have for sale the whole archive plus a set of great hints and extensive solutions and so forth. That's available for purchase and download. We are just really keen to find ways to meet teachers and help teachers. That's really what's next for us, is to continue that. Hearing from teachers, what is it you need to reach your students? How can we be there to help you in whichever way? And to get the feedback that then helps us iterate so we can reach more and more gifted kids and more better, so to speak. So that's what's next for us.
Yeah, I love that. So you have your website, silverquicken.com. How can people follow you on social media as well?
We're on Instagram and Facebook, both at Silver Quicken.
There are 13 letters in Silver Quicken, just to say that was something we thought about way back when.
Oh,
it's true.
I like that. Look at that.
So spell it as you would, you know, silver plus quicken, nothing in between. And you get to 13, which is a special number, as we all know.
We like 13. Taylor's a big 13 fan, so it's inevitable. Taylor, I almost said Taylor Quicken. Silver Quicken plus Cameron.
Taylor Quicken. Oh my gosh, you just said it. You said it. It fits. It's
your
also lips 13 characters.
Her ears.
My head is exploding.
Oh my God. Will we fulfill the prophecy? I don't know.
Say, Lisa, before we go, thank you so much for your support of Silver Quicken. We are thrilled to be working with you and your team and your educators. We really, really are appreciative, and we are looking forward to more in the future.
Yeah, and if there's ever, I know you all just said, Brian, if there's ever anything we can do to support your teachers too, we're happy to do that.
I love that. I will definitely take you up on it. I'm a big supporter.
Brian.
I'd love to meet up with you guys. I can't wait to see you at NCAGT again in March. That's going to be a thing. I appreciate you guys coming on, and I hope that, you know, this inspires our listeners to check out Seed. I can't thank you enough for being part of They'll Be Fine and just bringing the magic into my life today and into the lives of our viewers. See what I did there?
Love it. It's so much fun to see the kids really thriving. Thank you so much for talking with us this morning.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please help us grow our community by sharing this episode with a friend, colleague, and on your social media platforms.
And don't forget to subscribe and follow us on Instagram at They'll Be Fine.
NCAGT provides you with resources like this podcast. Please find us on social media or visit our website at ncagt.org to learn more.
Please note, the thoughts and ideas shared in this podcast are as diverse as our guests, not always reflecting the official NCAGT stance. Until next time, stay curious and keep learning, because we can't just hope. They'll be fine.